The Movie Files, a podcast featuring behind-the-scenes tales of motion picture history. Sponsored by Aplomb Publishing. Visit us on the web at www.aplombpublishing.com.
Welcome back to Movie Files. I'm John William Law, your host. Thanks for tuning in. We are going to talk a little bit about something in the news recently. Classic movie, too, though, so certainly fitting within our wheelhouse here. Gone with the Wind is in the news lately, and it's in the news for a couple of reasons. Mainly it is primarily in the news. It was going to be a movie that was picked up by HBO Max to kind of put onto their streaming service or their service that they are just launching now. And it was just recently announced that they would pull that from distribution, that they've decided to not air Gone with the Wind as a film on their platform, mainly because of the current situation with the racial unrest and the discrimination and things like that. And there's been a lot of stuff, obviously, in the news about that happening in the United States and all the kind of protesting and issues around racism. And so Gone with the Wind being a movie about the South, there's been a lot of things in the news about removing artifacts or statues and flags and things that depict the South in some kind of positive light or some way that would kind of, you know, make that period of our history somehow positive in some positive light. And so the decision to pull Gone with the Wind is sort of a mixture of kind of positive and negatives, I guess, in a way. I don't want to talk too much about commentary behind it, but I do think it's an interesting, and I did want to kind of do a podcast on it, because it turned out that after the HBO decided to pull it, there was a lot of kind of backlash and a lot of kind of discussion in the media. And so if you're looking on social networks about it, or you're even reading news articles, there's people that are talking about, you know, was this a legitimate thing or was this right thing to do? It turns out that, you know, Gone with the Wind moved to the top of Amazon's bestseller charts for TV and movies the day after the Warner Media announced this change for HBO. And so that's kind of an interesting thing. It's a good turn in a way, because it does give people the option to kind of still see the movie and purchase the movie. And it is available in a number of places. And I'm sure that something like iTunes probably still has it for download as well, as rental or purchase. Gone with the Wind is one of those movies where it does have a piece. It's in itself as a film has a historical relevance. Yes, it is also depicting an actual event. And I think that there is a definite argument on both sides of the fence that, as a movie that in some way covers this story, does it give relevance or importance, or does it spin some positive light on, you know, that time and what went on back then? I don't think the movie does that. I think if you watch the movie, I think that the movie, in a way, again, is a telling of a book by Margaret Mitchell, who wrote a book about life in the South during this period, during the Civil War. And it is an attempt to accurately tell a historical series of events. It doesn't tell anything in a factual way. The characters that are told in the story are fictional, so it is that. I don't necessarily know that it positively puts a positive spin on slavery anyway, but I could see how people might find the movie somewhat offensive if they're seeing characters who are being portrayed in a kind of negative stereotype way of basically having, you know, white slave owners and black slaves, and that being kind of an uncomfortable thing to watch. But the fact that is a part of our history, that it is something that we have to grapple with, that we will always have to live with, the fact that that existed, that time was there, I think to try and some way, you know, erase every symbol or every artifact that actually depicts or talks about that is probably wrong. To basically ban Margaret Mitchell's book from libraries is probably wrong, just as it would be to ban the movie. I think the ability for people to make decisions as to what they want to watch or what they don't, what they think is entertainment or what they don't, I certainly think it also plays a role in, you know, what movies we make in the future, whether we're going to tell stories like that in the future. But Gone with the Wind as a movie if you look at it, it was a hugely successful movie. It is still today, I think, one of the highest grossing, most successful motion pictures of all time. So to simply disregard it because of the story that it tells, I think is a mistake, because it in itself is a historical movie. It is one of the first kind of big epic color films. It was a big story. It started in the 1930s when the book came out. There was a whole bunch of stuff around, you know, angling for the rights to turn it into a film. And David O. Selznick was the one, I believe, who had the rights to it. And then he negotiated with MGM to actually help produce and release the film around the world. And MGM had Rhett Butler's character, who was Clark Gable, kind of lined up for the role, and Selznick really wanted him, and so he needed to kind of negotiate with MGM in order to get Clark Gable into the role. So they did that, and that did delay the production a little bit. There were some different names that they had talked about, but there were lots of casting names for all the different characters. Vivian Leigh, who would make her kind of big screen debut, I think, in this film, certainly in Hollywood, to Hollywood audiences, would be one of the people that came out of a long, exhaustive kind of casting search that went over something like a year or 2 years of searching for the perfect Scarlett O'Hara. And every leading lady, from Bette Davis to Joan Crawford to Norma Shearer, I think Miriam Hopkins, a bunch of them were all kind of considered for the lead role. Katharine Hepburn very much wanted to play the role, but they ultimately wanted someone who was familiar, a new face, who was fresh and young. Paulette Goddard, I think, was one of the other people. When it kind of got down to the end, they had sort of two women who were kind of leading in there, and I think it was between the two of them. And I think Paulette Goddard, I can't remember who she was married to at the time, but there was some discussion about whether she would be the right person because if she was already sort of a little known in Hollywood and had a famous husband. They decided to go with Vivian Leigh, who was kind of a fresher face. And Vivian Leigh would go on to win an Academy Award for her performance. The film would win lots of Oscars for lots of people, for Best Picture and for Best, I think, the Best Director. I think there were a number of different people associated with the direction of the film, and there were a number of people that were associated with the writing of the film, too. So that sort of is also kind of an interesting piece of the history. Victor Fleming is the credited director. He was also working on Wizard of Oz, I think, right before this. But George Cukor was originally assigned as the director, and he got fired, I think, about 3 weeks or so. And he'd actually worked on the film for a long time. He'd worked with David O. Selznick, who was a friend of his for many years, and they were working on the film together. And Cukor was actually trying to prepare Vivian Leigh and Olivia de Havilland, I think, for coaching them for kind of their performances as kind of Southern Belles. And so he spent a lot of time doing that, apparently. And but he was, when they got into production was going very slow. And Cukor, who was known as a director of women's pictures, I guess about this time he was starting to get that kind of assignment or that name. He was going too slow, and so they decided to kind of punch up the pace and replace him. And so he was sort of upset about it, I believe. And there was a kind of a big rift in the friendship between the two men for a while. But he would end up going on to do a movie called The Women, which was actually the movie that he would become very well known for, very successful for, and would really kind of solidify the perception of him as a director of women's films, of a really successful director of that. So Victor Fleming would then do it. But Victor Fleming also would step out for a while as well, and he would actually have need a break from the production as well. And then they would use another director to kind of assist him in his kind of break. I think his name was Sam Wood. Sam Wood, I believe, was a kind of sort of an assistant director, not somebody who was well known in Hollywood. He was more of like a kind of one of MGM's kind of standby directors or studio kind of directors, and not didn't have the name appeal. But he, I think, Victor Fleming kind of got exhausted at one point, and so there was about 3 weeks or so that he had to come in and help kind of keep the film kind of afloat during the production. There were a number of other people supported the writing work as well. So the guy who was credited with it, Sidney Howard, would actually die, sadly die before the film was actually released. He was the one who was kind of the, you know, credited with the bulk of the work for writing the screenplay, based on Margaret Mitchell's book. And then, another writer named Ben Hecht, who was very famous in Hollywood, he was brought in to kind of help rewrite and clean up the screenplay a bit as well. Howard would be the credited writer, and he passed away. He was killed in a terrible accident. He apparently was a somebody who didn't really like the Hollywood limelight. As a successful writer, he sort of lived outside of that. And he had on the East Coast, I believe it was, he had a farm, and he used to live on the farm and kind of tend to his farm when he wasn't working. And he was killed in a tractor accident. He was actually trapped by his own tractor. I don't know the exact details of all the story, but I think it goes something to the effect that he was in his kind of starting up his tractor, and I guess he somehow it lurched forward and it pinned him between the tractor and I guess the back of like a barn or something, and he was killed you know, in that space. And so he would actually go on to win an Academy Award posthumously for his work on Gone with the Wind. The film was released many times. It was released in 1939 very successfully, and then Selznick, I think, sold the rights to the story, the film, to MGM in around the early 1940s, 42, I think it was. And then the film was actually re-released after that. It was released in the 40s, I think in 1947. It was released around 1954. It was also released in 1961. And then I think there was another release in around 71. Even for the 50th anniversary in 1989, a film was released. It's since then has come out in kind of, you know, obviously home video and then DVD and Blu-ray and digital releases. So it's actually had a long kind of history with finding its way to the public. It was aired in TV. I think one of the first times was probably about in 1976. Again, it is by far, you know, has made, you know, huge amounts of money. It's one of the most successful films in film history now. It was nominated for something like 13 Academy Awards. It would go on to win 8 of those. It won Best Picture, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actress, Director Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Art Direction, and Best Editing. The other interesting thing is that Hattie McDaniel became the first African-American to win an Academy Award. She beat out Olivia de Havilland, who was also nominated for the film. And that was a big deal. And she was actually, you know, it's unfortunate in a way. It was interesting to think back at the time, because Hattie McDaniel was seated at a table in the very back of the room, where all of her other white co-stars were seated at a table in the front. And when she won, they had to escort her from the back of the hall actually to the front to accept her award. And it was a big, I mean, again, I think that is a huge, hugely important thing about this film, is to look at a performance like that and recognize that it is, you know, that an African-American woman is the first one to win an Academy Award for performance, and it should be seen. And people should see that, and people should know that those were the things that people had to do, the performances that people had to make to make a living and to survive and to pave the way for where we are today. So I think there is a lot of importance to the film that we shouldn't look away from simply because the story that it depicts is somehow awkward or uncomfortable or wrong. But it is good to see it in the news again, and it's nice to see kind of films like this get talked about, and it's nice to know that people are interested in the stories, and if they do learn about it, I think that is another thing that's important, that in the world of education, we do get a lot of education for films. I think that you can't necessarily look at a film like Gone with the Wind and say, oh, I'm going to get an education on what the Civil War was like, because I don't think it does that. It's certainly not a film about the Civil War. It's certainly not a film about racism or slavery. It is a story about a kind of a romance that takes place during this time, and so the people that are kind of telling this story happen to have all kinds of different roles from walks of life in it, and it takes place during a war, so the impacts of all those things happen to all these people. So It sort of tells a point of life at a point in time in a fairly accurate way, but it is a fictionalized tale. That's sort of all I was going to say. I thought it was interesting. This is sort of the first actually show I'm recording for the kind of new platform. We've sort of moved the podcast into a new place, and so not that it's really changed a lot for listeners, but we are retooling it a little bit and changing things, and it's kind of being folded into this other kind of podcast show that I do, which is called Hollywood Declassified. So we're trying to organize these so that sort of a separate regular occurrence of we'll be delivering these kind of movie files type backstories, but we're also doing kind of another series at the same time. So thank you for listening. Obviously you can certainly check out Gone with the Wind. It is a long movie. I have a copy of it. I have watched it probably 4 or 5 times in my life. I am not a huge fan of Gone with the Wind. I don't dislike the film. I think it has a lot of good, interesting things. I think for the time that it was made, it told a story in an interesting way. I think there's a lot of, I find fascinating kind of when they're filming kind of large scenes and stuff, the things that we can do very easily today with computers and technology, they had to find innovative ways to do. And so I like looking at films from that aspect of it was made during a certain time by a certain set of people with a certain skill set and a certain technical ability. And I think you have to respect it for those types of things. And I think that it is interesting that way. It is quite a long movie. You do have to commit yourself if you're going to watch the whole thing to a good three plus hour kind of dedication to it. But there is a dedication to it. So commit to your time if you're gonna watch it. Anyway, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time.